This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. According to a person with knowledge of the discussions, U.S. President Joe Biden and administration officials have encouraged Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other top Israeli officials to wind down the bombardment of Gaza as the Israeli and Palestinian death tolls mounted and pressure grew on Biden to move more forcefully to stop the fighting. Top Biden administration officials underscored to the Israelis on Monday and Tuesday that the time is not on their side in terms of international objections to 9 days of Israeli airstrikes and Hamas rockets, that it is in their interest to wind down the operation soon. China's UN ambassador says France is seeking a UN Council resolution calling for a ceasefire between Israel and Palestinian militants who control Gaza. Zhang Jun, the current council president, confirmed that France's UN ambassador, Nicholas, informed the council during the third round of closed consultations Tuesday on the conflict that a resolution was being prepared. The United States has blocked the UN's most powerful body, which is charged with maintaining international peace and security, from issuing a press statement calling for a halt to the violence, insisting that it would not help diplomatic efforts to end the conflict between Israel and Hamas. U.S. President Joe Biden's efforts to spotlight his infrastructure plan are being overshadowed by the escalating violence between Israel and Palestinians. Conflict sparked protests during the president's visit to a Ford electric vehicle center in Michigan Tuesday as the White House faced growing pressure to intervene. Biden is working to gain Republican support for his $2.3 trillion package. This is VOA News. A hate crimes bill to combat violence against Asian Americans in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic passed the House of Representatives overwhelmingly Tuesday and will now head to U.S. President Joe Biden for signing. The bill is also approved by an overwhelming margin in the Senate. Reports of violence against Asian Americans spiked since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. Activists and police said that anti-Asian sentiment was fed by comments from former President Donald Trump, blaming the pandemic on China using terms like Kung Flu. The measure designates a Justice Department employee to expedite a review of hate crimes reported to police during the COVID-19 pandemic. It provides guidance for local law enforcement agencies to report hate crimes, expand public education campaigns, and combat discriminatory language in describing the pandemic. Spanish troops patrolled the border with Morocco in the Spanish enclave of Ceuta on Tuesday after thousands of migrants swam into the northern African enclave. Video footage showed soldiers at the beach trying to keep migrants there as some swam to shore and others made their way around the fence on the breakwater that marks the border. A spokesman for Ceuta's government delegation said the soldiers will work with police in sensitive locations within the enclave to maintain order on the streets. The International Olympic Committee on Tokyo Olympic organizers start 3 days of virtual meetings Wednesday, running into some of the strongest medical community opposition so far, with the games set to open in just over 8 weeks. The meetings are headed for IOC Vice President, headed by the Vice President, who will attempt to again assure the Japanese population that the games will be safe and secure. Much of Japan, including Tokyo and Osaka, is under a state of emergency, which forced IOC President Thomas Bach to cancel a trip to Japan this month. U.S. Senate Republicans are signaling they will try to block or at least slow down a Democratic effort to create a bipartisan commission on the deadly January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Their opposition threatens the chances of launching an independent look at the siege and how it could be prevented from happening again. The Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, said Tuesday he's pushing the pause button on the legislation to form the commission, which is expected to pass the House this week. The House Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, said he won't support it either. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Paris Summit on supporting African nations hard hit by COVID-19 concluded Tuesday.
We have worked on the pathway to accelerate the exit from the health crisis, and to sum it up, it would require setting our eyes on 40% vaccinations of everyone, everywhere by the end of 21.
The new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations lays out the Biden administration's policy on Africa. Liberia prepares to launch its National Environment and Climate Change Conference. Malawi's parliament makes a U-turn to confirm the country's first female anti-corruption chief. And the trial of Ivory Coast opposition leader Gion Soro and others begins today, Wednesday.
I can say that the trial has everything to be considered as a masquerade, both in substance and in form. What will happen could be interpreted as proof of enslavement of the justice of my country.
And there is a vaccination delay in Kenya. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Paris Summit on supporting African nations hard hit by COVID-19 fallout wrapped up on Tuesday with sweeping calls for massive financial and vaccination support for Africa and a broader sea change in relations between donor nations and the continent. Lisa Bryan reports from Paris.
Host French President Emmanuel Macron called earlier for a new deal for Africa. This Paris summit offered at least a beginning roadmap to get there. Among the goals he and other leaders outlined are doubling COVID-19 vaccination targets for Africa by the end of 2021 under the COVAX vaccine sharing scheme, persuading International Monetary Fund member states to triple so-called special drawing rights monetary reserves for Africa to $100 billion, and giving Africa the ability to produce and distribute COVID-19 shots at home.
Ce moment peut être une chance à saisir pour enfin.
Macron said this moment could be seized to respond to broader, long-standing, and so far unaddressed challenges facing Africa. He said an economic but also strategic new deal with Africa would not happen overnight, but the talks had triggered a new dynamic.
Ce qu'il faut noter, c'est qu'il y a eu un changement de paradigme. Il y a quelque chose.
The same message was heard from Senegal's president, Macky Sall. He said a paradigm shift is underway in Africa's relationship with richer nations, from having programs imposed on it to co-constructing what is needed. That offers hope, he said, because we know our problems better than anyone. More than a year in the making, this meeting, gathering leaders from Africa, Europe, and global financial institutions, was backdropped by a series of bleak statistics on the pandemic's toll on Africa. If the continent has been less hard hit by the pandemic than other places, it is suffering in many other ways, with tourism and other revenues drying up. Africa's economy is expected to grow just over 3% this year, about half the world average. It faces a nearly $300 billion spending shortfall over the next few years. Experts fear millions more Africans may tip into poverty, and less than 3% of Africans have been vaccinated against the virus. There is no durable exit from the continent's economic crisis, IMF chief Kristalina Georgieva said, without beating the health crisis. She says ramping up the vaccination campaign will generate trillions of dollars in additional output, benefiting not only Africa, but also richer economies.
We have worked on the pathway to accelerate the exit from the health crisis. And to sum it up, it would require setting our eyes on 40% vaccinations of everyone, everywhere by the end of 21. That is very important for Africa. 60% vaccinations by the middle of 22. And then we have a hope of turning this page.
Il n'y a pas assez de de mobilisation de ce côté-là de la part de nos populations.
Democratic Republic of Congo President Félix Tshisekedi, who is also African Union chair, said having Africans manufacture and supply COVID-19 vaccines could help overcome the reluctance among some of being inoculated with foreign shots. He called for greater debt relief and market access for the continent and for international financing to take into account its fight on terror. But he also said African governments need to do their share by establishing good governance, fighting corruption, and supporting Africa's youth. Tuesday's financing summit wraps up 2 days of high-level talks on Africa. On Monday, IMF member states agreed to clear billions of dollars Sudan owes the institution as part of broader support for Khartoum's democratic transition. And Macron announced scrapping Sudan's $5 billion debt to France. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The new U.S. representative to the United Nations and noted Africa expert, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, lays out the Biden administration's policy on Africa ahead of a U.N. Security Council meeting on the topic today, Wednesday. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The new U.S. representative to the United Nations says she doesn't see the African continent as a challenge, but rather as a home away from home. That's the attitude that U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who forged her diplomatic career on this continent, says she plans to take into a key U.N. Security Council meeting this week about challenges facing the vast continent. Those include violent insurgencies in places like Mozambique and the Sahel region, conflict in Ethiopia, economic destruction from the pandemic, and more.
We're committed to being a partner to Africa as you confront these threats and these challenges. And we believe that the best and the strongest partnerships are built on a foundation of trust and transparency and accountability and areas of mutual opportunity.
Such warm words are a departure from what Thomas-Greenfield acknowledged were a frosty 4 years between the Trump administration and the continent. The career diplomat has represented the U.S. in Kenya, Gambia, Nigeria, Liberia, and as President Barack Obama's Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. Now, as representative to the U.N., she's bringing the Biden administration's Africa policy to the global stage during Wednesday's meeting. Thomas-Greenfield acknowledged the goal is not the work of one meeting or even one country, and singled out another country with vast outreach to Africa.
The United States can't do it alone. We have to do it in consultation and support of the African people, and we do it for the African people. I would say that it worries me as I look at Africa's relationship with China, for example, that that is a relationship that sometimes rests on coerciveness, indebtedness, and not in partnership. And I want our message to be completely the opposite of that.
VOA asked the ambassador about increasing hostilities between Israel and Hamas. 10 of the 22 members of the Arab League are African states, and that body has harshly criticized Israel's recent military actions in Gaza. The U.S. blocked a U.N. Security Council statement calling for a ceasefire amid the violence, with U.S. officials saying they prefer quiet, intensive diplomacy to solve the problem. Thomas-Greenfield said the administration is pushing for a peaceful solution on multiple fronts.
We are engaging with Africans on this issue, both at the Security Council and across the board. We have taken intense diplomatic efforts to try to find a solution to this situation from the most senior levels of the United States. As you've seen in the press, President Biden has engaged several times with President Netanyahu, Secretary Blinken has engaged with government officials, and I have engaged with the government as well as other parties here in New York to push for a solution. And again, that includes members from Africa.
The 15-member Security Council, which currently contains Kenya, Niger, and Tunisia as non-permanent members, meets Wednesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Ivory Coast, the trial of opposition leader Gion Soro and 19 others is expected to start today, Wednesday, in the capital, Abidjan. Soro, who is in exile in France, is charged with plotting to destabilize the Ivorian government.
The former president of the Ivorian National Assembly was sentenced last year to 20 years in absentia. The trial comes even as the African Court on Human and People's Rights in Arusha, Tanzania, last year ordered the Ivorian government to suspend the arrest warrant against Mr. Soro and release the 19 alleged co-conspirators. Habib Sonargo is the European spokesperson for Mr. Soro's Generation and People in Solidarity GPS party. He says the trial is a masquerade, both in substance and form, and also a mockery of justice in Ivory Coast.
I can say that the trial has everything to be considered as a masquerade, both in substance and in form. What will happen could be interpreted as proof of enslavement of the justice of my country. To get an idea of this, I will ask you and your listeners to ask yourself whether a trial that will be serious and which will see 20 people appear can last 2 days. Well, know that this is what we are dealing with. I would rather speak of an expedition, and I will not be surprised if we were told that the verdict has already now.
The African Court on Human and People's Rights, which is based in Tanzania, said last year that the Ivory Coast government should suspend the arrest warrant for Mr. Soro and then release the 19 people that were arrested. Now, with this trial going on, it seems that the Ivorian government is not respecting the decision of the African Court on Human and People's Rights.
Well, James, I think your question contained the correct answer. The lawyers of Mr. Guillaume Soro have also published a press release to make their surprise to see the elder of judges ignore the decision of the African Court of Human and People's Rights. Concerning us, this ignorance is a proof of a snub of the Ivorian justice to a jurisdiction which is superior to it.
Now, there were parliamentary elections held in Ivory Coast last year, and some members of the opposition took part in the elections, and there has been some reconciliation going on the part of the Ivorian government with the opposition. What does Mr. Soro think about the government's offer for reconciliation?
James, I don't know if it can be said that participation in an election triggers a process of reconciliation. For reconciliation to take place, all parties must recognize that there is material for reconciliation. We have been witnessing for a few months now the release of several political prisoners. Should we agree to this? I don't think so, because these people should never have ended up in prison. On the other hand, we can welcome the government's decision to release these men and women unjustly torn from theirs. We hope that those still languishing in prison will be released. They should not be seen as hostage and or pressure tactics. Reconciliation will take place when all political actors, without any exception, begin to respect each other and respect the people.
Former President Gbagbo is contemplating is on the verge of returning to Ivory Coast. Does Mr. Soro hope to return to Ivory Coast soon and when?
Of course, Mr. Guillaume Soro aspires to return to his country. No one should be forced into exile, let alone other political differences. The question, therefore, does not arise. When to know, if I can say that, the future will tell. But we are optimistic that it will not be long in coming.
Habib Sonargo is the European spokesperson for Guillaume Soro's Generation and People in Solidarity Party. He is speaking with us from the French capital, Paris. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 19th. Liberia is preparing to launch its national conference on the environment and climate change, which is scheduled to take place in early June. The conference will be held under the theme Ecosystem Restoration, a pathway towards a greener and sustainable environment. The gathering would also reinforce Liberia's commitment to sustainable development, including its financial commitments for addressing climate change. Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia.
The country's Environmental Protection Agency say it is making preparations for Liberia's participation at the upcoming United Nations Conference of the Parties, or COP26, in early November in Glasgow, Scotland. Liberia's Environmental Protection Agency Executive Director Wilson Tappe says the government is seeking international support for the implementation of a climate action plan, which Monrovia has agreed to under Paris Climate Agreement of 2015. It commits Liberia and other nations to reducing greenhouse gases and fighting climate change. Liberia is backing up its financial support and strategy for climate actions with a large financial commitment, its National Determined Contribution, or NDCs.
We are currently putting at $2.8 billion, and this is the first time that this country has been able to quantify its contribution to climate change and the environment. If any other country had that, this would be the amount that would be required.
Mr. Tappe says Liberia's NDCs will show the world the important role Liberia is playing in saving the environment.
In the case of Liberia, we have the largest carbon sink, forest covered, close to 50% of the Upper Guinea region. That makes us significantly important in these discussions.
The conference will bring together experts from West and East Africa. Liberia is working with different bilateral and multilateral partners in formulating the financial support it will present at the COP26 6 months from now. Manuel Fontes is a consultant from the European Union assigned to Liberia's Environmental Protection Agency. He describes how its nationally determined contribution will benefit the country.
It's a very important tool that not just is going to bring finance into the country, but also sustainable development to the country.
The United Nations Development Program says it is helping Liberia develop a plan that will help the country meet its commitment to fighting climate change over the next 5 years. Ibrahim Tumbe is the program coordinator for the UNDP in Monrovia.
This time around, we hope to develop an NDC implementation plan as well as cost the NDC so that we're not just making commitment, but we have a detailed strategy for mobilizing resources to ensure that the NDC is implemented.
Stakeholders will gather in Monrovia between June 2 to 5, 2021 for the conference that will also focus on creating awareness on the state of the environment, threats posed by the impact of climate change and other environmental issues, including flooding and the creation of a new settlements in the wetlands across the country. Because of its location along the coast of West Africa, Liberia has long been threatened by rising sea tides, extreme weather, soil erosion, and challenges to accessing supplies of clean water. However, leaders hope to change that with improved mitigation efforts, especially those in the energy and transport sectors that will help reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
Malawi lawmakers made a U-turn and confirmed Martha Chisuma as the first woman to head the country's Anti-Corruption Bureau, or ACB. Lawmakers have rejected Chisuma for the post last week, raising accusations that the opposition scuttled the process for fear of being prosecuted for corruption during their time in power. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
17 lawmakers on the Parliamentary Appointments Committee attended a special meeting Monday to review the last week's rejection of Martha Chisuma. 13 lawmakers participated in voting, while 4 from the opposition Democratic Progressive Party walked out in protest of the new voting procedure. Chisuma was then elected to lead the ACB with 12 in favor and 1 abstention. Humphrey Mvula is a social and political commentator based in Blantyre. He says the boycott of opposition lawmakers confirms public views that Chisuma's rejection last week was a calculated move to frustrate the fight against corruption.
Otherwise, they had no reason to walk out. But these individuals may have been under strict instructions from their principals, their bosses, that we must not confirm Chisuma. That possibly are afraid of Chisuma. And they look at Chisuma as a more determined ACB director, and that should not spare them.
During last week's vote, half of the lawmakers on the committee gave her low marks after an assessment interview, and the aggregated result Sochi Zuma scoring just 14.9 votes out of possible 25, below the minimum pass rate of 17. This caused a public uproar, and Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera called on lawmakers to, in his words, put political and personal interests aside and do their part in accelerating the change Malawians have sought. Parliament later passed a motion directing the committee to submit a detailed report on why it turned down Chizuma. As an ombudsman, Chizuma investigated several recruitment procedures in government-owned institutions. She recently removed five top officials from posts at Malawi's communications regulator, saying they were illegally employed during the administration of former President Peter Mutharika and the then-ruling Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP. Mvula says he thinks Malawians are tired of corruption.
And then that gives the respite to Malawians who are looking for this vice to go away. And Chizuma is such a gallant person who so far has shown that to do it. This is a time when most individuals will be afraid to indulge in corruption, because now the advantage is that as SAB director, she has got an enabling law that will make sure that she will not just investigate, but she will investigate and arrest.
Chizuma did not respond to VOA inquiries for an interview. However, she told a local radio station that her first job as SAB boss will be to restructure the institution.
So my first priority is to look at this. The staff structure of ACB and to see who is where and if we have got enough staff, because you need to have right people in the right places for an institution to take. And that's my experience from the Office of Ombudsman. If you have wrong people, it won't work.
Government authorities say the confirmation of Chizuma will complement President Chakwera's fight against the graft. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Kenyan health authorities say they will not be able to give a second dose of COVID-19 vaccines until at least June due to a shortage of AstraZeneca doses. Kenya has vaccinated less than 2% of its population so far, but the Ministry of Health says efforts are underway to acquire millions of doses. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
36-year-old Wilkis Ivana helped her elderly father get vaccinated from COVID-19 in March. And now she's worried for his health.
Now it is May and there's no the second vaccination, so we are wondering for how long are we going to wait? And the government promised that it's going to give out the second phase of the vaccination. I'm really worried because from my understanding, until you get the second dose of the vaccine, that's where you'll be fully safe.
Kenya began vaccinating its population in March after getting 1 million doses of AstraZeneca vaccines from India. So far in Kenya, 950,000 people have received a jab that gives them protection from the coronavirus. Kenya was supposed to begin its second phase of vaccination in May, but India, which is fighting a huge wave of COVID-19 cases, has banned the exportation of vaccines. The chairperson of Kenya's vaccine task force, Willis Akwale, says the lack of doses has stopped the vaccination process.
Kenya expected to have got shipments in April and May. We got information that these were delayed. We were told to expect in May. And even right now in May, there's no real concrete confirmation that we are going to get them. Therefore, for us in Kenya, with this uncertainty, we decided to shift the date of the second dose from 8 weeks to 12 weeks. The first people who got their first jabs at the beginning of March will now be due for their second dose the first week of June. So we remain hopeful that COVAX will be in a position to deliver some doses.
23-year-old Grace Kamau, a Nairobi resident, failed to get a coronavirus vaccine for herself and her 50-year-old mother.
So, Niliambo, the only way I can also get vaccine is if I do it privately.
She says, I was informed I will get the vaccine if I do it at a private hospital. The private hospital was charging between 7,000 to 10,000 Kenya shillings. Kamau says, coming from an informal settlement, and you tell me to bring 7,000 to 10,000, and that's for one person's dose. It is hard. I don't have that money. Akwale told Kenyans not to panic.
The future is good. We only have this period of May and June. and maybe part of early July that we may have a challenge. We want to vaccinate more people. We want to ensure that all adult Kenyans are actually are vaccinated by end of next June.
Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
And that's it for this Wednesday, May 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a great day.